This is Thrace Relations, a podcast about Spartacus, the television series on Starz Channel. Hello, I'm Em.
I'm Steve.
And I'm Paul.
Welcome back to Thrace Relations. This is Season 0, Episode 3, Paterfamilias. Okay, so what'd you guys think of this episode?
Not one of my favorite. It was entertaining still, but it doesn't jump right out at me. It's like, you know, an amazing episode, but a needed one.
It's solid, but it's a slow mover. It's not bad by any means. It's a good episode, but it's not. The pacing of it is real deliberate. It's got its story to tell, and it does it in its segments. It's real, I don't know what's the word I'm looking for, but. It's a not in a nutshell. It's not bad. I liked it.
Mm-hmm. Needed.
You got to figure they got to keep the action on almost like a roller coaster because mm-hmm. you have to have the dips and then the
right.
going up and everything. Because if every single episode is just over the top, it starts to numb you after a while.
Well, so. Then you're gonna really run into a problem if every episode was amazing.
Because yeah.
then one season to the next, it's just gonna turn to shit.
And yeah. you got law of diminishing returns setting mm-hmm, in
right.
too.
You can't have a kill them all or
yeah, but know. It was still good. I mean, I enjoyed it.
Yeah, it has a lot of good moments. Mm-hmm. Like I specifically think of Gannicus smiling when the fight starts to break out in the Ludus, but we'll get there. I love that. So, the episode opens up with Bodiatus announcing to the gladiators about the. Placing Gannicus into the Primus that Varys is now being a patron for. And we also are reminded of what happened last episode with looks that are transpiring between Gannicus and Melita, right?
Mm-hmm.
And just some comments that are the sacrifices that were made or something like that. But we're also, Bodiatus is also announcing the promotion of Animaeus to Doctore. He, actually hands over the whip, which has been passed down through many doctores, and he's handing it to a man of honor. So now the next scene, we have a doctore, Melita, and Gannicus, a brief scene where they talk about what just has transpired. And Gannicus is, of course, acting a little bit squirrely around doctore, and doctore notices, and when Gannicus leaves, he thinks it's because Gannicus doesn't support his promotion.
Does he give, his wife's name is Melita, right? Mm-hmm. Does he give her almost kind of like a look? Was it just me?
During that scene or
yes,
on the
during,
balcony?
During that scene. He kind of turns and, Gannicus turns and looks at her and gives her almost like a, I don't want, it's not a pervy look, but kind of like a, you know.
I remember what we did look.
Yeah, you know, kind of like, but only for a second and then he realizes, you know, that's why, I mean, of course he doesn't look in Doctore's eyes, but still it's, I don't know, I just caught something there maybe for a second that came across as like, oh yeah, fuck, you know, I shouldn't have even looked at you, let alone.
I think it's an uncomfortable situation yeah. and I think, you know, they're sharing that together, so
mm-hmm.
I didn't read it as pervy, it's just like they look at each other like, oh shit, kind of,
yeah, not pervy, but he lingered, to me it felt like he lingered for like an extra second, then she, you know, gave him another look back, like, all right, you know. But it might have just been in my fucking head. So
there's a lot of unspoken stuff in this episode, you know,
yeah.
when or not unspoken, but you know, people say things and they have two meanings, double mm-hmm. entendre, I guess.
Yeah.
When they're talking, you know, we all have, you know, there's a lot of people saying things along the lines of we all have to do stuff, you know, when we're stripped of choice and this and that, kind of like they're trying to rationalize their behavior. The best way they can, because they really didn't have a choice. So mm-hmm. they have to, once you do something, you have to reason your way into living with it.
Yeah. Doesn't Spartacus say in Blood and Sand, you always have a choice? Isn't there a point where he's...
I think so, yeah.
Probably, yeah. It sounds like something you would say.
Yeah, so because I think he even felt that way about Varro, after Varro's death. Mm-hmm. I think he told that to Varro at that time. Anyway, so that's an interesting contrast, despite where the source of where it came from was Spartacus, because, you know, he believed there was always a choice. And because to me, this whole season, this short season, is really more about the slaves than Blood and Sand was, mm-hmm. or where you're seeing a lot of how the oppression really affects them. And just like what we saw with Diona later in this episode.
Well, it's like the start of the debauchery in the House of Badiatis. You know, mm-hmm. I still think that they're getting trained in the ways of fucking Dirty McNasty, because even when they start pimping out their slaves, it still looks like it's bothering them in these, when in future episodes, they're just like, go.
Yeah. It's
which
expected.
One would you like? You know, so it's interesting to see the turn in the Badiatis.
We're starting to understand what it can get them. Mm-hmm. What that kind of, you know.
Yeah.
So we go to a scene with Doctore's first training, where he's coming out as the Animaeus is coming out as a Doctore, and he's working in his new found promoted position.
He's not very effective at all.
No, he's got too timid of
a
voice.
Yeah, way too timid. He's kind of like somebody who just got promoted to the boss, mm-hmm. and they don't know how to, you know, all these
manage
people were
friends.
Their coworkers yesterday, mm-hmm. so then they're just like, you're going to have to do what I say now. And then he's saying things and they're not doing it. Like, mm-hmm. you know.
Now, does he know how to use a whip at this point?
It doesn't seem like it.
Yeah. No, he doesn't.
Okay. That's what I figured. Because it looks like in that scene coming up that he was practicing.
Yeah. And I'm sure you guys have been in positions before where you've been promoted and felt uncomfortable about it. And I think, because I have, and it's like a, where you don't feel like it's a legitimate thing, like, you know, I don't think I'm really supposed to be in this mm-hmm. position. And you kind of see yourself, like, you judge yourself in that way, and you're seeing other people judging yourself in that way. So that's why you're not effective, I think, because mm-hmm. you're your own worst enemy in
people
a way.
People can sense a lack of confidence and management. And until, you know, I think all good managers have a little bit of self-doubt, and that self-doubt drives them to be the best that mm-hmm. they can be. And to be the person, or a better person, or a better worker, at least, than the people who they're asking to do these things.
Yeah.
And that way, then they see that in you, and they're just like, oh, I don't want to let this person down, you know, or whatever. So you have to have that little bit of nagging on you to kind of spur you to be
better.
So
you can make up for your own perceived flaws.
Right. But if you don't have that at all, and then you become overconfident, then people are just like, this guy's just an asshole. He doesn't know what he's talking about. He thinks he's all that, but he's not. Mm-hmm. And, yeah. So you have to strike a balance, and, you know, Animaeus isn't there yet. He just strikes me as somebody who, you know, he's like, well, I was the best out of all these guys when we were all on the same level. Mm-hmm. Now I got to be the boss man. And it's just like, you feel like you're starting over, because you have to employ a whole new skill set.
Plus, you have to know how to manage your friends.
Yeah.
To manage, you do have to be you have to be firm.
Right.
You know, and it's not easy.
You can't let.
That's why you never hire friends. If they certain friends, like 90% of my friends, I couldn't hire. I've tried, and it just didn't work out.
Yeah, it makes it difficult when you're friends with the people you're all of a sudden mm-hmm. having to babysit. Now we have the scene where Badiatis and Lucretia and Gaia are celebrating, and Badiatis makes his entrance by, and he says, at last the gods remove cock from fucking ass.
Definitely another opiate party.
Definitely.
Yeah, they're not just drinking. They look a little sloshed.
Yes.
You're getting this is a pretty explicit sex scene. They're getting the three-way on pretty, HBO style.
And it started from the beginning, so it's getting more comfortable for them to have another person with them. Because before she had to kind of like creep her way in, and now it was just kind of like full on.
Well, Badiatis goes to her first, and Lucretia's just getting off watching.
Yeah.
So the pervy elements are starting to come out.
So, well, that's the thing. They're just getting desensitized to all the stuff that their naughty friend does.
Yeah.
That's all. I mean, she's just a bad influence.
That's what she is. She's an embodiment of the bad influence.
Very much so.
Your mom would tell you about.
Yep. She's the one that's not allowed to come over.
It's pretty funny when his dad walks up. I didn't know it was his dad. So when he opens up the curtain, it's like, oh, great.
Yeah. Somebody else is watching.
The door. You know, and then of course you find out and it's dead, and all their reactions are just fucking hilarious.
Especially Gaia, because Gaia just starts laughing. Yeah, so he calls Titus, like you said, Titus arrives, and he calls Badiatis to his office, and he's admonishing Badiatis for the state of the Ludus, and Badiatis is upset that he wasn't given prior knowledge to his arrival, and he's like, do I have to make announcement of me coming home to my own house?
And he's like, what, are you going to put out oils and flowers?
Yeah, make it look like...
Instead, you smell like sex and wine. You know, she just poured it all over him, practically, so my homeboy stunk.
Sex, wine, and hubris.
Smells like sweat. Sweat and sex.
Swex.
Shows you, too, that dads have been the same even since Roman times. This is my house, motherfucker. You're going to do what I say. I pay for all this. It's like, yeah. Oh, God.
This is where Badiatis Sr. gives Junior the line about always looking towards the horizon, you know, criticizing Badiatis for his ambitions, basically, and not living up to, you know, the more modest lifestyle of a Lunista, or modest ambitions of a Lunista. And also he reveals, Badiatis Sr. reveals his knowledge of the clashes that Badiatis has with Tullius. And he reveals that he got this information from Solonius. This is where Badiatis is. Solonius?
Mm-hmm.
Everybody, anytime Solonius' name is said, Solonius?
No one can just say Solonius.
Well,
they
he looks
to
different than everybody in the show. The way that they dress him, the way that he's got his hair,
his earrings, and everything done.
So he's kind
of a lot more elaborate.
It's kind of like that kid that dresses in disco fashion when he shouldn't be, you know?
Yeah, he is disco, isn't he?
Yeah.
like the kid from Freaks and Geeks when he gets that one piece.
Yeah.
Yeah, and he goes to school.
Poor kid.
Oh, yeah.
And then he tries to change, and he's running through the hallways naked. It's fucking hilarious.
Yeah, he's just different than everybody, so I think that's why he's always getting that reaction.
Sweets.
Yeah, Titus Badiatis, he's really aware of the class system in Roman society.
Oh, absolutely.
And he approves of it, and he's really one of those people who takes it to heart and feels like his
station.
Place, yeah, his station is where he's supposed to be, and he feels like a Lunista is right there on that, where, you know, on the rung from top to bottom, and he thinks that you should just accept that that's where you are and then just try to be the best that you can be with that, and, you know, and don't try to aspire to anything higher than your station, which
don't make the house, you know, look like shit.
Yeah, which, you know, should note is completely at odds with how the younger Badiatis sees things, because he's just looking up and that's it.
He's aspiring. Don't hold me down.
And Badiatis, you know, talks about Gannicus, and this is where Badiatis Sr. finds it laughable that Gannicus is, you know, considered the champion of this Ludus, and he feels that Gannicus is a jest. He's no true champion.
In a way, he's right.
He is, yeah.
In a way, he's right, because if you look at all of the, and this comes up later with the smile you were talking about, but in the ways that a champion is supposed to act around the Ludus, he doesn't really do any of that.
No, he's just hammered all the time.
Yeah, he's waking up late, he's drunk, he's fucking, and then, but when he gets in the arena, he just comes up spades, so, you know.
Yeah. Well, it happens in real life. You see it in professional sports all the time. You have those guys who are out in the community helping, going to hospitals, they have their own foundations, and then you have the guys who are, like, out at the club, shooting people, getting into trouble, fighting dogs, stuff like that. You see an even mix. Like, you see how Crixus was very Mr. I'm the champion. He really, you know, he embraces it. And you see that with both. It's just...
Even Spartacus did that after a while for fashion. He wasn't the champion that Doctori would have approved of, but he was a leader in his own right. And Gannicus just displays none of those qualities. He has no taste for leadership. And he's just kind of like, whatever.
I do. Yeah.
Whatever, you know. But he knows when it's time to...
He would have been a drunk outside of the loop.
Right. I'm sure he's always been.
Now we have a scene where Lucretia is flustered, and she's, you know, hurriedly cleaning up the villa, you know, having a feast prepared. And Gaia, who is not flustered at all, and she makes mention how she can see that Lucretia's not handling as well, and Lucretia's
teasing her.
Yeah, yeah. And Lucretia's pleading with her, please just
fuck off.
Go along with it.
Please just fuck off.
Act like with some class just for a little bit.
Because she tells her, I'm going to be thrown in the streets.
Yeah.
You know, both with my husband, and that would just suck. You know, because they're used to living with some form of luxury compared to it looks like everybody else.
Yeah, really.
You know, so, you know, I don't blame her. I probably would have told her, all right, you've got to leave for like a month.
Yeah. You can't be around this dude.
And then Titus comes in, and he does not like Gaia.
Nah, he knows a hoe when he sees one.
It's like, memory of you has not faded.
Slot.
Yeah, this guy's got a stick so far up his ass. He's just
Well, he's the dad. He just came home. It's like in real life, come home, see your kids partying. You know, they're supposed to be running a business for you, and it's, you know, it's fucking madness.
He's
the kids out doing fucking who knows what, possibly beating up people, getting beat up. Your ludus is a mess. Drugs and alcohol.
I say he's got some valid points. I don't know if I would really say he has a stick up his ass. I think, you know, in his position, I'd probably feel the same. Yeah. Like, this is my fucking house. Like,
I'm not saying he didn't have valid points. He's just, there's no give or take with him. He's just kind of like, this is the way. He's the Stannis Baratheon of the Spartacus world. You know, he's just kind of like a.
I agree with
no
that.
No humor.
Did a good job at casting him again. You know, it's the perfect.
Yeah.
Father figure. I think it almost looks
all
like
stern
him.
Looking and everything. Yeah, he looks like he could be his father. Because
everybody's had the lecture just about. I think that he's giving. You know, it felt like a lecture. It's like, oh, poor guy. And then you realize, that guy's kind of a douchebag.
But yeah.
You still feel bad for him. For him. You know, because he berates him pretty well throughout most of the episode.
Yeah. And you can see that Bodyatus really, we'll have to get to it because he actually makes a really good quote. But, so now we have Asher and Dagon. I'm going to say Dagon. I don't remember. I don't know how to pronounce his name.
We'll just call him the foreigner, right?
The Syrian.
Yeah, foreigner, Syrian. Yeah.
Big Syrian and little Syrian.
So they're offered food from Barca and... He's, you know, Barca's offering it to fellow brothers, and all the men in the cafeteria are like,
so obvious.
It's yeah.
Come on.
You can see it coming from a mile away, but these two just think, we cut the mark now. Yeah, we're cool.
Asher hasn't gotten his senses together yet. He's still a pup.
Yeah, he's excited. He's like, yeah, they're finally treating us like brothers.
Look at the way they look at us. Yeah. Bum, 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 bum.
And there's piss again in the
maybe piss and other stuff. You never know.
Yeah.
Now this is the one scene where Gannicus does kind of act like the leader of the Ludus a little bit because they get up to go fight with Barca and them, and he just puts a hand on the bigger guy's chest and he's like, "Stop!" He doesn't even look at him. He's just looking straight ahead. He's like, "Sit back down."
And he disapproves of Barca and Octus for starting it.
Yeah, he throws some shit at him, like throws the spoon or something
down.
You think they told Asher and them, no, you guys eat last. And then they all huddled around the bowl. Just a second.
Yeah, yeah.
Food.
They're like, let me drink this 2 liter of Coke first.
No, hold on. You guys last. This is the bowl that the medic has made.
So Asher and Dagon are told that despite having received the mark, they are not considered to be part of the Brotherhood. So that's important because Octus says, you know, a goat could get the mark but still not be a brother. Mm-hmm. And then we see later Titus comes to greet his gladiators and he's actually greeting them, all of them, rather warmly, especially Animaeus. And you can see Bodyatus envious of that relationship between the two of them in the background. And we also see that Titus is well admired mm-hmm. among the men. Just come up, they gather around him and everything.
And they listen to him. I mean, he's like, he commands respect.
Well, he's probably never done any bullshit like having one of his gladiators fight blindfolded in the street to the death.
Fuck anybody. And
Yeah.
So
I don't mean to interrupt, but right before this is where Animaeus sits down to eat, right? And
he says, "I would not have situations that are beyond my control come between us.
When he's right, he shouldn't have sat down, at least for the first, you know.
You got to separate yourself a little bit,
I agree.
You know.
When he's sitting down,
when he sits down with Ganicus to kind of say, "I want to clear the air between us. I didn't want situations to unfold like this." And you know, Ganicus is like, "Yeah, me neither." Which is another double, you know, meaning thing. Like, I didn't mean to bang your wife. Sorry, but I'm not gonna say it. I'm just gonna say it with my eyes. Mm-hmm. You know. But Ganicus has got a point. It's like he should separate himself a little bit from
that way. Then start listening to him. Yeah. Because he should be, you know, taking part in all the reindeer games.
But I think Doctori takes that wrong, doesn't he? A little bit personally.
Yeah, yeah, because that's when he says, no, because you're my friend. I'm not going to let anything come between you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. So I'm just reiterating something you guys already said. Sorry.
No, it's all right.
So now we have Badiatis and Lucretia preparing for bed. And he's complaining of his father. And he says he's forgotten the feeling, the sudden abyss, as he sets disapproving eye over me. And I'm sure all of us having parents, we've all felt that. That's a pretty, that's actually a really good description of what that feels like, the sudden abyss. I like that.
And it's another way for the characters to feel younger than they were in the previous seasons, because it's like two teenagers sitting in their room after a lecture.
Yeah.
You know, not that I'm thinking of them teenagers now, just that it's, you know, it just helps a little bit with the illusion of,
yeah, it is
supposed to be a little bit younger than they were.
Right. That they're still under the heel of somebody else's authority.
Yeah, it felt more still prequel to me. So it was cool. And we all definitely felt the,
oh, yeah.
The sitting in a room fucking steaming over shit, you know.
I'm so disappointed in you.
So now the next morning. Oh, and also before we go to that, Badiatis also mentions that he would like to see his father's departure happen sooner.
Whatever he wants, let's just make it happen.
Yeah.
Get him gone.
So now the next morning we have Animaeus struggling to keep order amongst the gladiators who are not used to taking orders from him, and which we've already touched on a little bit. But at this point he's commanding Barca to fight Crixus, and this order is actually not obeyed until Titus comes in and says, you know, Barca, follow orders. And Barca fights with a spear, and Crixus is unaccustomed to fighting against someone with a spear, and he's beaten over and over and taunted. And
oh yeah, they fuck him up.
And Barca grabs his crotch really hard and says something to him, and that's humiliating. That would be humiliating.
Before that, he even takes the spear and like shoves it between his butt crack.
Yeah.
Guy.
Yeah,
kind of saying like, this is what my cock would feel like.
Uh-huh. Oh,
have some.
Fondles them. Barker just went too far, damn it.
Yeah.
While they're Badiatis Senior is up there on the balcony, Badiatis Junior comes out and they discuss Ganicus and Crixus, because Crixus has caught the attention of Titus. And he mentions how he saw, that name sounds familiar. I saw him in the ledger. You know, you spent a lot of money on this guy. And
idiot. He was like, idiot, you know.
And then they head off to town. Which is, I don't think he really makes known where he's taken Badiatis just yet.
He said that they were late because he slept in like a stupid drunk gladiator.
Like a teenager.
Yeah.
Still disappointing his father.
Smell like wine.
So then Titus takes Badiatis actually to Tullius, and Invedius is there as well. This episode's got some really cool blocking, and anyway, it doesn't matter. I'll edit that out. But anyway, so you know, there's some things alluded to. It's not outright said about what has happened with Badiatis and Invedius yet. Tullius is talking about how Vettius was attacked on his way to meet Varus, but of course Titus is putting two and two together.
Yeah, well, I think the pissing in the face was definitely a tell giveaway.
Well, he knew that.
Absolutely.
He's going to know, but you know, Badiatis had played it cool from the beginning, and he didn't send anybody whose face could be recognized or anybody who had a mark, so he can just play innocent and be like, where was the mark? Whose face did you see? Shut up. And then he calls him a wet cunt, which is pretty awesome.
Yeah.
Well, he also knew that Gladiatus had successfully solicited Varus's patronage at this point. So he's like, oh, okay.
But he's got a convenient excuse for everything. You know, you can't pin it to him.
No.
He basically OJ'd himself out of this situation.
Oh, yeah. For sure.
Everybody knows that he did it, but nobody can prove it.
Yep.
So.
I like how Titus and Tullius, they're both in control of this meeting, and they're both trying to control
the young ones
behind them.
This is also kind of funny when you look at that sentiment, and it just shows you that no matter how far you go back, when at least males, it may be females too, but when males turn a certain age, they always think that they're the last of a dying breed, and no one's ever going to do it like I did it. You know what I mean? You hear your dad say it, you hear your grandfather say it, you hear your bosses at work say it.
I've caught myself saying it.
And then, you know, are we going to be saying that in 20 years?
Yeah. Not 20 years. I've caught myself recently saying it.
Yeah.
With these really young kids that come into work.
Yeah.
And it's like, what the fuck, you know?
Well, it just seems like once you get past a certain age, everybody has this impression of the world, that the world's going to hell in a handbasket, and it was my generation who really did the tough work, and we were the last ones.
Our generation did any tough work.
Yeah, yeah.
Gen X.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Gen X. We might have ruined it for everybody else, but...
Hey, we're better. I'm going to defend Gen X till the day I die. We got handed nothing.
That's true.
You know what I'm saying? It's like all these other generations were working up to something, and then our parents just said, we're not going to do that. Fuck you. And now we're really saying it. You know what? Well, we're not even going to have kids, so fuck you. You know?
Well, now this new generation, they're pumping babies out again. It's the new baby boomers right now.
Yeah, I feel bad for them. I feel bad for them because they're babies themselves. But anyway, it's like, I guess what I'm commenting on here is that the story writing is really good, because even back in ancient Rome, you're getting this sense that the wheel just keeps turning. You know what I mean? Every generation is going to think the generation before them is shit, and the generation that they're part of achieves something great, and this is the last we're going to see.
What makes it relevant? You know, it's nice. I agree.
So Titus and what's his name? Tullius?
Tullius.
Yeah, they're kind of like sharing this and saying, let's school the youth, you know, in diplomacy, because these two shits can't hold their tongues and stuff. So.
Yeah, Tullius says to Titus, your son has much to learn in the way of diplomacy.
Plus they knew it was going to drive young Bodyatus fucking crazy that they're even talking. It's like, I don't know how I even stood in the room with him. I wouldn't have. I would be like, no, I won't go in there. Fuck that. You go on your own.
So now we cut back to Barca and Crixus, and I think this is where Barca grabs his cock, as you mentioned. And and then, so that fight's over. He
squeezes, because homeboy's screaming.
Yeah.
He's not just grabbing it. He's like...
It wasn't a caress.
No.
It was a...
That squeeze.
That was a package check.
That's why Barca's so forgiving at the end.
Yeah.
It's probably like, I like what you're working with.
Yeah.
She's like, spear is definitely my weapon. Yeah, weapon of choice.
There's B on your arm could stand for booty. It could.
Bark, we can put another one to be Barca's booty.
Yeah, Barca. Yucky.
So Animaeus and Gannicus are talking, and Animaeus asks Gannicus to instruct Crixus. You can see a look on Gannicus' face, like he practically rolls his eyes. He's like, fuck. So, but he goes over there anyway. He walks rather slowly.
Wait, have you ever seen Wet Hot American Summer?
No.
Paul Rudd is in it. You know who Paul Rudd is.
Yeah.
He plays this like petulant teenager who doesn't want to do stuff, but he's like a pretty boy. So anytime anybody asks him to do anything, he just rolls his eyes. He's like, ugh. And this is what Gannicus is in this episode. He's just like, oh, come on. You know, he's like a petulant teenager.
I'll find that particular scene, the cafeteria scene where he had to pick up his tray, and we'll show him before he leaves
today. Yeah,
that's like the best. He did not want to pick up his tray off the floor.
Wasn't it Amy Poehler's character who was trying to get him to pick it up? No,
is it a good movie?
It's funny. Okay, yeah,
we'll get it.
It was what's her name? Girl You Love.
That covers a lot of ground.
You know what I'm talking about. The comedian. Janine Garofalo. Janine Garofalo.
I don't love her. I more like her.
You know,
whatever.
Her.
You do
it's
her.
Just like, you love it's her. Like, oh, I'm not disputing that. I'm just saying, you know, love doesn't have to come into it. Love is a higher thing. That's all.
Love is a strong word.
Yeah.
Okay. So now we have Lucretia and Gaia are on the balcony, and Varys arrives again, and he brings this really this guy does look like a douche. No wonder they hired this guy. Or I'm not even sure if douche is the word. I mean, he looks like he would be into some fucked up sex shit.
I think Quentin Tarantino would have made a good person to play this part.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because he's got the, and not that creepy. He's a, looks like a creepy perv, but yeah, he's got the hairdo and everything, and it reminds me of his character from Dust Till Dawn.
Yeah.
Like, oh, you want me to rub your feet? Like, yeah. What? What? No.
Like, yeah, when he's imagining stuff to Juliette Lewis.
Fit this
you,
part.
I can do that for you later if you want me to. She's like, do what? And he's all like, I can do that later for you. She's looking at him like, what the fuck are you talking about? Hey, did you notice it looks like he's wearing eyeliner?
No.
It really does. It looks like this guy's wearing eyeliner like he's a Roman emo guy.
It could have been. That's what I mean.
Some guys
I
really have that look that... naturally, though. Like it's a
pigment. This guy was super perv, though. And I didn't think that they would ever shock me with another sex scene. That was pretty disturbing.
Yeah.
It was disturbing as shit. Yeah.
Well, he basically picks out.
Immune to it. And,
See, this is another instance of Lucretia still having a shred or scrap of humanity because, you know, Varys is kind of like, he's saying basically, well, this guy's here not to sample the gladiators necessarily, but the other delights that your household offers. And she's like, well, that was a one-time thing. You know, that was something to gain your patronage, and now that we got it, we don't need to be doing that shit again. And he's like, and he just dangles it right over her head again and says, well, if you want your man Gannicus to fight in my Primus, you're going to put out. And
such
so,
bullshit.
Yeah, so, you know,
well,
he has
made
this
a
guy.
Move to get rid of.
Yeah, Melita.
Melita.
Yeah, because it's like she didn't want to put her through that again. Mm-hmm. So, you know, he picks out his gladiator, which is just, you know, another face in the crowd at this point.
And Lucretia's like, can't we? You don't want to have him bathed and
washed?
Boiled,
yeah. She's, you know, he's all, nope, I'm stinking like shit. Ugh. And then this scene, I mean, you can explain this one if you want.
It's just fucking
terrible.
The
one he goes over to the two virgins.
Well, one thing I want to point out before they pick out the gladiator, when it's announced that, you know, let's not, you know, travel already treaded ground. Let's get some new slaves, and they look towards Navia and Diona. First, she says, you can pick the gladiator of your choosing. Mm-hmm. And we know those Navia and Diona have been giggling over Gannicus and mm-hmm. stuff like that. And then, so when the camera goes to them, they're both kind of like giggling again mm-hmm. because they're virgins and
they have no idea.
And they're hoping maybe it's going to be Gannicus, mm-hmm. somebody like that, or somebody as good looking and clean, hopefully. And then when it's revealed that it's this guy, Raskos,
Pigpen.
Shit breath.
Pigpen.
Yeah. It wasn't that he smelled like shit. It was his breath smelled like shit is what they said. That's fucking nasty.
Oh, yeah.
So, okay. So then So Raskos has been selected.
Medicus told him that shit would be better for it.
Just pack it with some shit, man.
Pack it with this. It'll be fine.
You have a built-in apothecary in your body. Make use of it. So many people let it go to waste. Okay, so Raskos has been selected, and now, again, we see Navia and Diona, and now they're freaking nervous, and they have to degown, and they take off their clothes, and they hold each other's hands, and that's when that perv goes over there and sticks his finger up both of them, and he decides Diona is tight, really tight, which the reason why I think he wanted to make this as brutal to her as possible.
Oh, absolutely.
And it is brutal. It's disgusting. And
this goes back to what you were saying about this whole season being about seeing things from the slave's point of view, like how cruel and, you know, uncaring mm-hmm. the Romans are. And so, you know, when you build all this up cumulatively and you get to an episode like Kill 'Em All, it even has even more impact. Mm-hmm. You know, so whenever you watch it again, you're just going to be
well,
like...
Well, if you think about what happened before with Melita and Gannicus,
mm-hmm.
you know, they were... Xena? She was, you know...
Lucretia.
You know, how they were sitting there and they were both just, like, disgusted what was going on, but they didn't show it, you know. Now they're getting desensitized again because now she's sending in somebody who she knows isn't prepared for it. She knows the guy's nasty and a freak. So it's another part of her leveling to her desensitizing to become what she becomes in that season. It's another step. Like, okay, you've seen this. because it made me feel uncomfortable as hell. Now you're going to see this, and you're even more uncomfortable and disgusted.
Yeah.
And she knows, and she just keeps doing it. So it's her rise to being who she is. Her background training.
I was just going to, I wonder if it's like a Hail Mary thing. Like, okay, you know, they weren't satisfied with the last one. You know, he's threatening to take the Primus away after that. So what would be like have even more like salacious? Let's get a virgin, you know, and you know.
Do you think older Bodyatus would have done this?
No.
Do you think he definitely would have been like, not. No, let's not. So it's just.
Apparently nobody does this because even Vera says such base devotion would be impossible to conceal in Rome. Mm. Yeah, this is like unheard of behavior. So
that's no.
It's just the beginning of the ends for them.
So this sex scene, though, when you know they're going at it, and then the guy, you know, the pervy guy tells him, you know, get her on top of you, and then he comes over and he starts like licking her face and saying how you know there's the
shit.
Yeah, talking shit like there's the angelic, and then there's the what's the other word he used? He was drawing the line of tension and difference between, you know,
beauty and grotesque.
Beauty and grotesque, the, you know, like the duality of human nature, I guess. And there's each in the world, and you know, you can't have one without the other type thing, or at least you can't have one without the threat of the other. And he's all telling her this. Now, it looks like what he does is once he's done taunting her and he gets a hard on, he moves around to the back.
He
now,
does do this.
Is mm-hmm. this a double penetration type thing, yeah, or is he?
I think he's fucking her in the ass.
That's what I'm. Yeah, that's yeah. what that yeah. means. Yeah, yeah, double penetration.
Oh, I thought you were.
Pay attention.
Double veg, double eggs.
So,
well, you're asking, is this? What else is it?
Well, it could have been that you know he just takes over from the gladiator, but. I don't know. I'm asking you guys' opinion because
I think it was a dirty double pin.
That's what it looked like, and that's what I was afraid it was, because that's just horrible. I mean, it's bad enough this girl's losing her virginity to somebody that she doesn't even know or like, and then she's got to get done in the ass too. I mean, that's just
it's bad.
This guy's not stopping at anywhere.
No, with the other slave in there with him.
Yeah,
so, yeah, he's a sick fucking man.
But, you know, he comes out and he's well satisfied, and the pleasures of House Bodyatus are not exaggerated.
Oh,
so
yeah,
he's happy and Gannicus gets to stay in the Primus so far.
I think he knew that they were going to take him out. Well, no, I guess he didn't, because they said that he has to come back with injury. So never mind.
Yeah, that's a whole different plot, because one hand's that. Not talking to the other on that. So
exactly.
Bodyatus is being told that that has to happen, you know, probably in the next couple of scenes anyway.
Well, there's that, while this is going on, there's actually a scene where Salonius and Bodyatus, Bodyatus confronts Salonius in the street about him sending that message to his father, and Salonius has an excuse for it, like, you know, I can't remember what he said.
He said he was just, like, getting advice from him.
Yeah, because he did have a concern, and he wanted advice.
Good for
him
and
everything. And
then
do you believe that's true?
No.
I think Salonius is, I think it's at least half true. I think Salonius does care for Bodyatus like a brother, but I think that he feels like things are a little bit, out of place without Titus there. He feels like Bodyatus is not making the best decisions that he could, and he's trying to say, look, dude, I'm trying to save you from yourself.
Not just himself. He even says, save my ass too, because I'm gonna fuck, they're gonna think I'm fucking.
Yeah,
just like in the second episode. You know, he was just like, look, if you get excluded from the Primus, I'm getting excluded from the Primus. So he's that's the other half of it.
I said
at least half of it is looking out for Bodyatus, but the other half is looking out for Roger Daltrey himself.
Then there's no more disco.
That's right. And that's it.
No more dance fever.
And then there's Salonius and Titus are reunited, and they greet each other.
We then go for a walk together. Yeah. It looks so bad.
You think they're going to poop?
Who knows? Maybe they're going to disco.
Yeah. You know, this scene's funny because he tells Salonius that he looks old. He's like, the years haven't been kind to you. Yeah. And I almost wonder if they're like trying to say, look, this is a prequel season. We tried to make the character of Salonius look younger, but the dude's older than he was when he was old in Blood and Sand. So it's like, we can only do so much. So we're just going to mask that behind a little bit of
shit.
So you look old, dude. You're looking old.
And then I think Titus and Bodiatus also talk again, and this is where Titus brings the hammer down about the just what everything's been going on with the Ludus. He's like, Gannicus is out of the Primus, all that stuff. So now we're back at the Ludus, and Asher and Dagon are tired of having their food soiled, and we find this out because Octus and Barca are having some foreplay, and then they discover that their pigeons are missing.
Foreplay, that's straight up Brokeback Mountain right there. You know what I mean? I don't know if anybody's ever watched Brokeback Mountain, but like, it's not this like, you know, lovey-dovey two feminine gay guys. It's just like these guys, it's like they're fighting till they fuck. That's basically like what the foreplay was.
Yeah, it was,
Have you seen Brokeback Mountain?
No.
It's like the scene in the tent. You know what I mean? They start like wrestling around and punching each other. And then the next thing you know, boom. You know, they're doing it, and that's just, I would imagine that's how gladiators would do it. They're not going to be all like, you know.
Gentle.
Yeah, gentle and stuff. And
he doesn't get that until later in the following season.
But anyway, go ahead about the birds.
Yeah, so the birds are missing, and then we see bones on a table.
I loved it.
I wish Asher would have stuck one in his beard.
That would have been fucking awesome.
I know. And just kept it there, despite. Getting his ass kicked. So this, of course, you know, starts a fight. And it's filmed, so I love the way the camera and the choreographer, they must work together really closely.
Mm-hmm.
And the editor. It's just awesome. I love it. Because deciding when to slow-mo and then go back into, you know, regular speed of the film, it's so awesome. Okay, I need some new adjectives. But anyway, so we get to the fight. Gannicus, this is where he smiles.
Yeah, this is where he's not acting like a champion, because Crixus would have broke this fight up. Spartacus probably would have definitely broke the fight up, because, you know.
Yeah, if it was just a stupid fight like this.
Right,
sure.
Right.
Gannicus, even though Spartacus has started a few of these fights, but.
Well, see.
He had reason to. Though.
Crixus would have broke it up on the principle of, like, you're all brothers. You need to accord that to each other. And then Spartacus would have broken up and be like, save your strength for when we kill everybody. Yeah. So.
Well, Gannicus does eventually jump in, but he doesn't until Animaeus is actually struck by Dagon.
Yeah, and he jumps in just to fight with him.
Yeah, he's not taking it very seriously, because when it stops, he's on the ground. And if he was fighting seriously, somebody else would have been on the ground.
Because to stop a fight, you would go behind him and grab him and hold him. He goes in swinging.
Yeah, he just wants a little fun violence.
Uh-huh. I think he went in because that guy struck Animaeus.
Yeah, but he wasn't
mad. Oh, yeah, you're right.
He wasn't mad when he went in, though.
I think he was.
No,
I think he was.
I think he was getting
possibly. He did go in because Animaeus got struck.
Yeah.
Oh,
you know, he was like, all right, that's it.
That's
now
his
opening. We got to have a little bit of adult supervision here. But then once he got into the melee of it all, he was just like, oh, yeah, this is fun.
I think he went
in
for the fun of it. Because he's asking Crixus, you going to go in and help your brothers? And Crixus is like, I'm not a brother. Yeah. I can't go in. They're not my friends.
Yeah, because Asher calls for Crixus.
Mm-hmm, and he's like, nah. I got something to do over here. Can I go over there real quick?
Nobody cares about Asher. Who was there for Asher? You can't kill the two biggest gladiators, birds, and then go like, how come you're not going to defend my honor, Crixus?
Yeah.
You know, you're the one with the mark. Defend yourself.
Yep.
So Titus arrives back home at the Ludus just in time to see this. And,
poor Animaeus. I felt bad for him the most. It's like, man, he just looks like he shouldn't have been put in that position from the get-go, you know? It just looks bad.
You know what this reminds me of, though, is I came home the other day, and you were editing one of our previous podcasts from Blood and Sand, and I had made this point in that podcast, and I heard it as I was walking in the door. It was basically saying, I forgot what the scene was, but Bodiatus comes home and finds that Alithia had done something stupid and Lucretia was, you know, accomplice to it. And he's just like, I can't leave this house alone before you stupid bitches do something dumb, you know? And so, you know, the son becomes the father and Titus is in the same position going, what the fuck is going on here? What are you guys doing? So,
Titus blames that the misbehavior and the lack of discipline going on. For the fact that they're out of the Primus, he says that the gods do not favor them because of this attitude within the ludus, and that's why we've lost the Primus. Mm-hmm. And that's when Gannicus finds out that the Primus is, he's no longer in it, and he mm-hmm. looks up at Melita, and they're both like, fuck, so we had to fuck each other for nothing? Like,
right, yeah.
Yeah.
That's what the sacrifice is being talked about. You know, we sacrificed so much.
Yeah.
There's dignity and mm-hmm. oaths and everything just to further this, and then it's not even going to go anywhere.
So now we have a scene where the men are finding out who they're pitted against in the match, the Primus.
We get another scene of Crixus's schlong, which I know you hated.
They seem to tell him these things. Okay, guys, strip, and I'll tell you who's fighting who.
Yeah, get naked. Nobody hears who's going to fight who until I see some schlong action.
Yeah, so Octus is pissed because he's fighting Gannicus. And then we have a scene with Gannicus and Crixus, and there's a really good...
Octus is pissed because he's fighting Crixus.
I'm sorry. Octus is pissed because he's fighting Crixus, and then we have a really good scene between Gannicus and Crixus, because Gannicus is saying, I'm not fighting, and Crixus is upset that he is fighting because he has yet to receive the mark.
He's already buying into the honor system of this mm-hmm. whole thing and the way it works. Away. Yeah. So he's like, yeah, I want to fight, but I shouldn't be.
It's not right.
And then Gannicus says, there are many things given to us in this life for the wrong reasons. What we do with such blessings, that is the true test of a man. I love that quote because that's, I think, what determines who's going to be a hero and who's mm-hmm. going to be a villain.
Your focus determines your reality.
Focus? Did she say focus?
Focus. So tired.
She's got the nipples. Yeah. All right.
Wait, what movie is that?
Bubblegum. That's from Mallrats.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Now, after they leave the tent, she just pops it off.
Yeah.
We're at the villa, and Bodiatus and company are preparing to go to the Primus. Bodiatus Sr. Titus tells Bodiatus that this Primus is basically a test to see if Bodiatus is measuring up, because, you know, he's this Crixus guy. If he defeats his man, Octus, who's been trained under the tutelage of Titus, then that's going to show that Bodiatus does have the ability to be a Lunisa, right?
Mm-hmm. See what he's learned.
So now we're at the arena, and Gnaeus and Barca are having their fight. It's starting. And
Barca's helmet looks pretty fucking tough. I didn't realize it was him at first. It was pretty badass.
It's hard to recognize Gnaeus, too. But
mm-hmm. It's a decent fight, but you recognize Gnaeus by name, and you know, if you've obviously already seen the first season, that he's going to live mm-hmm. because mm-hmm. he's in Blood and Sand. So, yeah, but it's still a good match, but you pretty much know Barca's going to win, and then somebody's going to say mercy.
Yeah,
you know, let him live.
It's cool because he throws Gnaeus into the audience.
Yeah, there's a cool crowd surfing scene in there.
Is this the same fight, too, where the lady falls in?
Yeah.
She's trying to get out like a lion pit, like, oh, shit.
And the other lady gets blood in her face.
It got her mouth open.
Yeah.
And they're not as intense in the crowd as they are in the previous season when they're in the huge Coliseum, because in that one, there was always somebody flashing boobs and stuff. And this, they're just like, eating their nachos and hanging out, you know.
Well, this is like the preliminary fight, so maybe that's the reason why
they aren't drunk yet.
Yeah, their blood hasn't gotten worked up enough, so now they're not. They haven't got to the animal center of their brain yet.
Yeah, okay, that makes sense.
Plus, it's still morning, kind of, isn't it?
Yeah.
Or were these fights to take place after?
Well, we learned in the first episode that it's usually like mid morning, like probably around 10 o'clock mm-hmm. and stuff. When these like the ones of note don't happen until afternoon. Mm-hmm.
Qualifying races.
Yeah. Prelims.
So before Crixus's fight, he's basically being pumped up by various people. First, it's Animaeus, and he advises Crixus to fight with honor, and if need be, die with honor as well. So Animaeus has some learning to do with his
like
coaching.
Fool boy.
Yeah.
And then second, to approach him is Bodiatus. And I think Bodiatus actually probably motivates him the most.
Absolutely.
Yeah, that's a pretty good speech he gives mm-hmm. him.
Yeah. Barca and Gnaeus are still fighting. when I wanted to point out, when Naos was actually upside down in the crowd, Parker comes up and hits him in the face. That was pretty cool.
Freebie.
Yeah.
And that's actually when Barca gained the upper hand and
rolled him
turned
over
that and... shit around. Yeah. And this is, Varys is given the decision, and he decides that Naos should live, and that's eventually who kills Barca's lover later. Well, incites his need to kill himself, I should say.
So I guess he never forgave, you know, him for that, mm-hmm. you know, defeat maybe. And he just
possibly
he decided
sick fucker.
He decided I'm gonna bang Petros after you leave. But he got taken out with the trash, so it's okay.
I'm sure Barca beat his ass many times.
Naos was the one who got thrown over the cliff, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yep.
He's always flying somewhere on his back. Over the cliff, into the crowd, whatever.
Yep. So, Tidus is given the privilege to announce the next match, which is between Crixus and Auctus. And this is, you know, there's not really a whole lot to say about the interaction between Tully. Well, actually, there is, because this is where Tidus starts coughing.
I thought they had poisoned him. I'm not going to lie, because
it's sudden, right?
Don't have any wine. It's bad for your tummy because I'm poisoning your dad. You know, I really thought that, oh, nice. They're going to poison him, and then they're going to put their man in the Primus, you know? But mm-hmm. it didn't work. Later on, they would have done it.
And when he starts coughing, Vettius, he's being snarky, and he's like, the climb doesn't apparently agree with him or whatever. And
yeah, because of where they're sitting.
Yeah, but Tullius is annoyed with Vettius. He's just like... go away. And he turns to Tidus. And so Tullius says to Tidus, you know, we'd like for you to announce the game. And Tidus is like, what, me, Lunista? And that's when Varys is like, we're the ones who decide, you know.
Mm-hmm. What happens here, motherfucker?
Yeah, and that's, again, showing.
He deigns to give him a privilege above his station.
With smugness, actually. I would say smugness is more of a. He's a great name. And he's not related to Bruce Campbell. We looked it up.
Yeah, he just looks like it. Yeah.
Well, fuck him, man.
Fuck him in his pervy ways.
So Tidus is announcing the last battle
between mm-hmm. Crixus and Auctus. So as we know, Auctus is an intimidating opponent for Crixus because he wields a spear and Crixus doesn't...
He's not familiar with fighting with the spear.
But we also know that Gannicus has instructed him to, you know, make him lose that spear and then you're going to have the upper hand. Mm-hmm. And we eventually see that happen. I really like this fight. It's really fun to watch.
I agree. It was cool the way that they had the, when the spear goes through Crixus' shield.
Yeah.
And then they give you the kind of like comedic look of, ooh.
Whoa. Yeah.
What?
Whoa. He like looks up and his eyes cross.
That was nice. And they could have given Crixus a dumber looking helmet. He might as well just put a bucket on his head. It even had little feathers and shit in it. It's like, oh man. Just take the helmet off. It'd be better without the bucket.
Now, was I wrong or was the shield that Crixus had the red serpent shield?
Nope, it has the octopus on it that he has.
Oh, it's the octopus? Oh, okay. All
right. Yeah, it just doesn't have as much paint on it.
Okay, so they repair these shields or did they just give them different ones and paint them? Because this one obviously had a spear hole in it after this fight. So,
well, I think in like the previous season, you see the higher they go and the more popular they are, the better their armor gets, the better their helmets get, the better their shields. So maybe the octopus just means something to him.
The other question I had is whenever Tidus announces him, he says Crixus
Mermillo.
Is that the style of fighting that he's going to use? Because I was going to say, I don't think they had his last name written down anywhere.
No, that's a style of fighting where they're more bulky, they wear more, and I don't remember, it's been a long time since I've read about this, but they wear more armor, and they're bigger in bulk, but I think they were the more, intimidating, and oftentimes they were paired up against a Thracian, because Thracians had the fighting style where they were usually smaller, less armor, and they could jump, and you know, so you had these
good contrast.
Yeah, exactly. And then also there's the ready Arius, which we're going to see Naos become later, mm-hmm. where you have the net and the trident.
Okay, I was wondering about that because I'm like, I'm pretty sure he doesn't have a last name. And if he, well, or if he does, they don't know it.
They call him Romillo, I think, probably two different times or so in Blood and Sand, and it's not really emphasized.
I really like him.
But, you know, Crixus has his his Spartacus moment whenever the spear goes through the shield, and then he's just like, oh, shit, I got to fight back, and he sees his chance, and he breaks the spear.
Oh,
and then,
yeah, he turns the tables. Yeah.
And Barca's like, fuck! The scene with Barca laughing, like...
That's actually very comical.
Yeah.
Because anytime Barca laughs, it just sounds forced because it just doesn't look right coming out of him anyway. But
and then he fucking knocks his sword out.
Mm-hmm.
And then he fucking guts him.
And he says, Barca has taught you well.
Bitch.
There, and else, there was an exact, I think, I'd have to double check. And it, I don't think it has any real relevance, but when Crixus fought, actually might have a little bit of relevance, because when Crixus fought Gannicus last time, because you remember Crixus says, yeah, I'll have a mistake this time, a mistake I'll never do again. He said, I think, twice now he said right. that, something along those lines. And he actually, when he fought Gannicus, he actually got him free of swords. Like, he took his swords away, and eventually Gannicus regains his sword. You see him slide and grab his sword, and that's when Gannicus gets the upper hand again. And you also see Auctus, you see a similar scene, just like frame, just the same way. He slides to grab his sword,
yeah.
And Crixus didn't let that mistake happen again for him. No, he ended up taking care of it. Pretty cool. Anyway, so Titus is surprised at this result of the match, and he's not believing that his son was, you know, worthy enough to train a gladiator, and was, you know, proved wrong. And they return to Ludus. Crixus is inducted into the Brotherhood. He recites the Sacramentum Gladiatorum. And he's actually welcomed, even by Barca, even though Barca has lost his lover at Crixus's hand.
Mm-hmm. Well, they always knew eventually it could have happened to either of them, you know, so I don't think
yeah.
they'd be too mad if they lost in the arena like that.
Well, know? He wasn't killed in the streets. He didn't fall off the cliff.
Yeah,
he died honorably as a gladiator, mm-hmm. so that's by another gladiator. So yeah. it's not just
Crixus who lives by those rules.
It's an acceptable yeah. thing.
Then later on, we have Titus admitting to Battiatus that he had underestimated not only Crixus, but his son. And he also reveals to Battiatus that he's not ever leaving.
Not until he dies. He's like, not until I lose, you know, all the breath of my body. It's like, don't tell him that.
And we get the closing scene is the best shot of Battiatus, at least in this whole season. And he just turns his head sideways and looks back, and it's just the perfect villain look.
Yep.
You know, like he's already scheming.
Oh,
like,
yeah, it's done.
You just gave me an idea, old man.
Because he is, he's like so proud of his son. He's like, we can do it together, you know, it's like an after school special.
Yeah. So, you know, he's craving all of this approval from his father all this time.
And he gets it.
He finally gets it, and then he's like, I'm going to kill that bastard.
It makes me wonder what happened to his mother. She's like, oh, I miss my mom, you know, and even his dad's like, well, I miss her too, fucker.
Yeah.
So it makes me wonder, maybe she died at a young age, and he was just a tough dad. That's why he's a little fucked up. Didn't have his mama there. I don't know. But yeah, it was awesome. The turn over the shoulder, snarky look, like, oh, he's dead.
So we have to talk real quickly about I need to look up Aaron Helbing and Todd Helbing. They're probably brothers, and in fact, they have the same last name. And they're
could
probably
just be a coincidence.
Yeah. They're probably Star Wars fans. In fact, I'm sure of it because
somebody's a Star Wars fan in reference to this episode, as far as the writers and
definitely.
Producers and stuff. Because there was at least 4 references to Star Wars here.
Yep.
Which he pointed out at the end of the episode because it could. One of them was obvious, but I didn't catch the other ones. They slid past
it. It went over my head, unfortunately. And I should have caught it. But
so what was the first one?
The first one that I noticed was that Titus says to Battiatus that he's always looking towards the horizon, which is what Yoda says to Luke.
Classic.
Yeah.
Then after that, we have where Tullius says to Titus regarding Bodiatus that your son has much to learn in the ways of diplomacy, which much to learn in the ways of the Force. And the way his voice sounded, it sounded just like, to me, Ewan McGregor imitating Alec Guinness. It sounded just like that. And if I play it back, you guys would agree with me.
Oh, absolutely.
And there's multiple times that Titus, his voice, he would lower his voice and he sounded like freaking Emperor Palpatine. And you're going to hear it again next season or next episode. And then the last one, wait, I think there's another one. Hold on.
There's definitely the one where
Barca has taught you well.
And you know, the one where he says, always looking to the horizon, that's actually a mix because that's actual words and imagery in your mind from memory.
Where Luke is actually looking at the horizon.
Luke is looking at the horizon on Tatooine, but he's told that he's always looking to the future, never his mind on where he was, what he was doing. So he's never, it never says that he's looking towards the horizon, but he's basically told the same thing, and then you have a mental image of him looking at the horizon.
Yeah,
and that's a classic. So, I mean, that was even a poster, too.
Yeah. It's one of the most iconic images out of Star Wars, really.
Because they do it in the prequel episode, too, with Anakin.
And I was, it was always confusing. Why is that a bad thing? Why not look toward the horizon or the future?
Sometimes you can daydream all day and
you
got to
be
zen.
Yeah.
You got to build the foundation today to be able to get what you want tomorrow.
And there was a... When I was going to, it's a stretch, but I was going to say where you see Lucretia and Gaia on the balcony, there's never just one. There's always
two.
Always two there are, master and apprentice.
It fits, though. That's a stretch, but it fucking fits.
Yeah.
But which one? Master or apprentice?
Because you have Palpatine and Dooku right there.
Jar Jar anyway, so.
Yeah.
Now, one thing I did notice about this episode that I'll give a nod to the... whoever puts them together, is the transition scenes in this one. They actually show you more of Thrace in the background of where the Ludus is at. Because there's a scene where you see up the cliff, like they usually show.
Capua.
Yeah, sorry.
Yeah.
And Capua is in the background at nighttime, and they've never given us that before. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so you can see the whole city down there.
You have to see where their villa's at. It's nice.
Because I always kind of wondered during the first season, like, where exactly in relation to Capua is this, like, how far away? And it looks like you pretty much got to dedicate the whole day to going into town.
Exactly.
You know,
I really wish I had read the books that I had read prior to even embarking on this podcast, because one thing I found out about Capua was they were known for, they grew a lot of flowers and they made oils, like scented oils. So people would come from all over to buy the oils there because you can get it cheap there. Mm-hmm. And then when Bodiatus and Lucretia are like down to their last money, they're running out of water and wine, and she's only got a couple drops of oil, scented oil, that's when they were bathing her. That's how, because I mean, it's like cheaper than anywhere else in the world right there, and they can't even afford that.
That's probably why, too, they're so far away that they could slaughter everybody and not have people coming to their rescue super quick. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It does. It looks like they're a fair distance away.
And we'll talk more about that. In Vengeance. So
what's the next episode?
The next episode is Beneath the Mask. What do we remember about masks?
A book? Oh, Behind the Mask. It's a book. Sorry.
The Man in the Iron Mask.
No, it's a Forgotten Realms book about a villain. It's called Behind the Mask.
Oh, this, by the way, Potter Familias was directed by Michael Hirst, who played Aeolus in Hercules.
Curly haired. Fuck. No, I'm kidding. It's from another movie that you guys probably haven't seen. Sorry.
What movie is it from?
The movie called Step Brothers with.
I've seen it, but I just didn't think it was as funny as everybody else.
The more
thought.
I watch it, the more I enjoy it.
Oh. Okay. Yeah. So, Beneath the Mask. See ya.
See ya.
This was a No Ship Network podcast brought to you by Esoteric Studios and Axolotl Tank Productions.